Okay, good morning. So, try to be a little bit ambitious today. Last week we spoke about the malacha boer, meaning separating. You can't separate good from bad on Shabbos, and what we, the basic idea that we came out with was that in order to separate on Shabbos, you need to be able to meet three conditions. You have to separate with your hand or an extension of your hand, meaning a piece of silverware. You can't use a special utensil that's designed for separating. You have to do it immediately prior to when the food is going to be served. And you have to separate the good food from the bad. And then we had many applications. One question that we had at the end, which I wasn't sure about, which I tried to look into a little more this week, was, so what about the sometimes berries or fruit come inside these plastic containers that have holes on the bottom, and you could run it under the sink and the water is going to go out. So we mentioned last time that washing the fruit is generally not considered to be, unless the fruit has visible dirt on it, we don't really consider that to be borer, even though you're getting rid of the dirt in order to clean the fruit. Since you can't really see it, we view what you're doing more as rinsing than a process of separating. You can't leave a fruit inside water in order for it to soak and the dirt will come to the top. That the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to do. But just to rinse off the fruit, that would be okay. But the question is, if you're putting it into a vessel which allows the water to go through, so isn't that separating? And even though it's happening immediately, and even though you're holding back the food and only the bad is coming out, you're using a utensil which is designed for a separation. So I think that in...
I just want to ask a quick question. When I learned that thing about the tuna, what you just said, I learned if you take a bite of it right away, that's okay, even if you use the rest later. So now we're saying it's not okay.
In terms of what, I'm sorry?
In other words, let's say I open a can of tuna. But I really am going to serve it for Shalosh Shabbos. I'm opening it on Shabbos for Shabbos, but I take a bite out of it right away so that I've used
it. Well, that's not a separating question. That's a question of opening.
I know, but that's that Borer thing that you just...
That's not Borer.
No, it's not. Whatever it was that you just said about the tuna, whatever you called it.
I didn't mention tuna.
I thought you said opening a can of... Or did we just say it? And you never said that?
No, so I didn't mention the tuna. Next time, it won't be next week, but next time we're going to talk...
I can't believe that.
No, next time...
So you still do that tuna?
We are hopefully going to speak. Part three will hopefully be dedicated to opening different types of containers, jars, cans, and the like. I don't want to talk about that now. Right, we're just dealing with the question of separating.
So that's not good then.
What's not good?
Water over the fruit that has...
So I think if it's the utensil that it comes in that plastic vessel, and that's the convenient way that it's packaged, then you're just running the water through, so the water doesn't really mix in because it really passes through quickly. So there I think there's room to be lenient. To take like a bunch of grapes and stick them inside a colander and then to wash them, I think is a more serious question, and I would not recommend that. Okay, so that's last time. I want to try and cover today, hopefully, three malachos. They're shorter than borer, but they do have some practical ramifications in the kitchen. Okay, so the first malacha that I wanted to talk about, we'll do dush first. Dush is technically threshing, meaning all the malachos are part of the process of the bread making, and they had different functions in the Mishkan. But the process of threshing so that the kernel of the wheat would come out of the chaff, which is holding it, so that's one of the malachos. So the applications of dush are not very many, but there's a tolda. And the tolda is a derivation of what's called the av malacha. Just like you have, parents and children, so you have the avos, the general principles of the malacha on Shabbos. And then the toldos are the derivatives of those. Now the toldos are the oraisa also. They're forbidden from the Torah. It does not make it into a derabanan. They're also derabanans, but a tolda is not a derabanan. So the common case of a tolda of dush is what's called schita. Schita is squeezing. Because it's similar to dush in that you extract a liquid from inside the salt. It's the same way that the kernel was extracted from inside the covering, so too, when you squeeze, you extract the liquid from inside whatever you are squeezing. It even goes so far as to include milking of a cow. right? You're extracting the liquid from the solid. You're extracting the liquid from the cow. Now, the two main principles that we need to understand are as follows. The first is that there are different levels when it comes to squeezing. Min HaTorah, so on a biblical level, the only things that you're not allowed to squeeze in terms of fruits and vegetables, I guess it's just fruits, we'll see, grapes, are grapes and olives. Olives are, I guess, a fruit, a vegetable, I don't know.
Fruit.
Fruit?
Has a seed in it.
Okay, there we go. So only fruits. There are no vegetables that you would squeeze that have a biblical problem of dash. The only two things that Min HaTorah you're not allowed to squeeze are grapes and olives. They have an elevated status because, in general, oil and wine have an elevated status in religious life. Midrabanan, you're not allowed to squeeze anything that's often squeezed. Any fruit that's often squeezed, you're not allowed to squeeze. You can't take an orange, a grapefruit, and squeeze it in order to get the juice out of it. That's a rabbinic prohibition of squeezing on Shabbos. And then the third category is that what's permitted is you're allowed to squeeze anything that's never juiced, anything that's never squeezed. Now, nowadays, there are very few examples of things. I think people just take the kitchen sink and stick it inside of a juicer. I think the only example the post-game talk about is watermelon. I don't think anybody juices watermelon. Maybe you get the water from. You squeeze the watermelon, I don't think anything is really going to come out of it. So if you can think of anything else, melons maybe, but now they have melon soups and all these other things, so maybe nowadays those are squeezed. So basically, almost everything in terms of squeezing it is going to be a dirabanan. So just to go ahead and to squeeze a lemon, that's going to be a prohibited on Shabbos, that's an issur dirabanan. That's the first principle we need to know. The second principle, which is very important, is that it's only forbidden to squeeze a liquid from a solid if it's going to land in a vessel as a liquid. If you squeeze a liquid from a solid onto a solid, then it's permitted. So for example, if you want to take your lemon and squeeze your lemon onto a piece of fish, okay, that would be okay. You have to try to make sure that you don't, flood the plate in order to have extra juice. That would be a problem because any juice which is free on the plate is not allowed. But again, if a little bit drips off, that's not the concern. Your intention is to get it onto the fish. Similarly, if you would squeeze it onto a salad, you can squeeze a lemon onto a salad, but it has to be directly onto the salad. You can't first squeeze it into a cup, figure out how much you need, even though you intend to later put it onto a salad. So, again, squeezing by itself is a problem, but if you're going to squeeze it onto a salad, then that's going to be okay. Similarly, when you're eating, let's say, something like grapefruit where the juice is going to come out, if it's not your intention to squeeze it, it just comes out because of the pressure of the spoon, then that's not a problem. That's not a problem either. But if you get to the end and then you squeeze the grapefruit because you want to get that last little bit, that is forbidden on Shabbos unless you want to squeeze your grapefruit into your fish. And that you could do because you're squeezing your grapefruit. I don't know if you'd want to do that, but you could squeeze it again into a solid. You just can't squeeze it for the purpose of the juice. Another practical case, I think it's probably more practical in Eretz Yisrael, maybe here also, is that if you have a pickle, sometimes pickles are very juicy, and a person wants to squeeze the pickle in order to remove some of the juice, not with no intention of drinking the juice, but because they don't want the pickle to be so saturated with the with the pickle juice. So in that case, it's also going to be permitted, even though you don't squeeze the juice onto a solid, because you don't want the liquid. The normal malacha is you extract the liquid from the solid because you want the liquid to exist separately. If you're going to be extracting the liquid in order to throw it away, then that is permitted. That also comes up in terms of a mother who needs to express milk. So again, the baby drinking directly from the mother is permitted, but to express milk for later use, that's going to be the malacha of dash. It's the same thing. Again, I'm not making any comparisons. Don't accuse me of milking the cow. Right? It's separating the milk from the... It's separating the milk. I was accused by one mother or somebody who asked me this question of calling her daughter a cow. So that's not what it is. In terms of the construct of the malacha, is the same, meaning it's separating a liquid from a solid liquid from the person. So if a woman needs to express the milk and because of discomfort or something like that, it's permitted, but in the same way, similar to the pickle, meaning as long as it's going li'ibud, if it's not going to be used, that would be okay. So to express it into a bottle which has soap in the bottom, so you can't use from the time the milk comes out, it's not going to be able to be used, and it's going to get spilled out, that would be permitted on Shabbos. Okay. The other time when it comes up is in terms of cleaning up in the kitchen, which is in terms of sponges and paper towels and things like that. Again, when you have a wet sponge, so the way that the sponge cleans is because when you exert pressure on the sponge onto the counter, liquid is extracted, and then you push the sponge against the with the liquid against the counter, now the counter is clean. So in such a case, it involves schita, it involves squeezing the liquid out in order to be able to, in order to use it to, excuse me, to clean the counter, and that would be forbidden on Shabbos. So the way that the, and it doesn't matter if it's running under the water, if it's not running under the water, anything, if you touch a very wet sponge, there's really no way to even hold on to the sponge. Even if you're going to do it very lightly and think no water is coming out, there's no way to grip onto the sponge without the water coming out. So the alternative, was what this, they call it the Shabbos scrubber. Basically, right. So the Shabbos scrubber, the way that it works is that it's synthetic and it's non-absorbent. So if it's non-absorbent, so the water sort of gets stuck between the different bristles, but it's not actually absorbed. Since it's not actually absorbed, there's no schita involved. It just happens to be there's water which is caught inside, and then again, scrubbing the counter itself isn't the problem. The problem is the water which is coming out of the sponge onto the counter, and then from the sponge. So what do you do if you have a spill on Shabbos? Right. So again, there are several issues. I mean, again, let's say juice or something which spills on the floor. Taking a bounty and cleaning up is going to solve part of the problem, but it's not going to solve the problem of everybody's feet getting stuck. You can get rid of the liquid, but your foot's still going to get stuck when you step on the apple juice spot afterwards. So what you can do then, again, you can't take the sponge and scrub it because the sponge has, you can't use the sponge at all, the sponge is muksa, because it can't be used for anything on Shabbos. So what you can do is you could take a cup, pour some water on top of the spill. You could even use your hand to mush it around a little bit, and then you could put a towel or paper towel without exerting pressure on it, because you can't let the water go back out. Let it absorb the spill, and then just throw them out. Anything which you would reuse normally during the week by wringing it when it's full of the spill, you should not use on Shabbos, because then we're concerned that when it's after it's absorbed, you're going to wring it out.
Than a rag, let's say.
It depends. Most people nowadays probably don't wring out their rag. Again, if you normally wring out your rag, then a paper towel is definitely better. The paper towel is probably better anyway, because I don't think anybody wrings out the paper towel to
reuse.
You throw out the paper towel and you take another paper towel.
Right.
I think, okay, if you would reuse the paper towels, then you just need, what you would need to do is you need to use enough paper towels from the beginning that theoretically would absorb the entire spot. Because once that's true, then there's no longer a concern.
What's wrong with like spraying it with something instead of using water?
Oh, you could spray it with something.
Like, you know, like just a spray.
You just might not want to mush it around with your hand. You could do that.
No, and then just take the paper towel and...
You can't push it with the paper towel, because the paper towel is going to absorb water, and then it's going to be coming out again when you're exerting pressure on the paper towel.
Okay. I see.
So if you were to take a kitchen tea towel.
Kitchen towel.
And put it on top of it, let it absorb, then pick it up. And
put it in the laundry room. Yeah, that would be fine. Oh. If normally you have a kitchen towel that you would, if there was a big spill, that you would take and bring it back to the sink afterwards, squeeze it out and put it back down again, that would be a problem, even to use it the first time, because we're afraid you may come to wring out that towel. And I think most people probably don't do that. You know, Baruch Hashem, we're living in a society where I think we have enough towels to be able to clean them up. Then you just need to be careful as soon as the towel has absorbed the spill, just to pick up the whole thing and drop it downstairs somewhere.
So you could clean your counters though. Can you spray wind at whatever it is, and then you could tell us what that.
Only if it's going to do it very softly. You can't do it right.
Right.
If the light spray is going to be enough, then you can, right? But again, with something which you would throw out, or a towel, something like that, not with a sponge.
Are you allowed to, if there was a flood in your basement, all right? Are you allowed to take towels and throw it on top of it on Shabbos?
Sure.
Just leave it there.
Yeah, you could do that. Depends on the level of flood. It might not do anything, but depends what kind of flood you're experiencing. But yeah, that would be okay. A very difficult question, which I don't want to get into so much, is baby wipes. Because again, baby wipes sort of present the sponge problem.
Oh, when you're wiping a baby, me?
Yeah, when you're wiping a baby.
And if it's not,
it's what?
Certainly don't wring out a baby wipe.
You don't wring it out, but the way that the baby wipe works, the baby wipes are not they're usually not totally saturated. So usually the liquid is inside the baby wipe. The way you're gonna be able to use it effectively is by pushing, in a violent way, by exerting pressure on the baby with the baby wipe, which makes the liquid come out of the wipe and then allows you to be able to clean the baby. So that's why they make a spray, which again is different than a regular spray, because you could technically use any spray. The reason that I think they call it baby spritz or whatever they call it, those bottles, the reason that it's better is because it has some, I don't know what to call it, soap, but it has something in it which helps clean, so that when you put it, usually if you put a tissue on water and try to do it, your tissue just breaks apart. So, but if you have this other, whatever it is, ingredient, in this spray stuff, then it allows it to go, works more effectively, and it wouldn't work. Okay, it's a major focus on posting about baby wipes. It really has to do with just figuring out what's actually happening. Is the water on the surface, or is the water absorbed? The more the water is on the surface, then the more room there is to be lenient. Okay, so that's the malacha of Dash, and most specifically how it relates to squeezing. So squeezing anything for its juice to be used as juice is going to be forbidden. Squeezing a liquid directly onto a solid, that's going to be allowed. So you can squeeze the lemon onto your fish, you can squeeze the lemon onto your salad.
So what if you are serving tea and someone likes lemon in their tea? Oh. So you're not really squeezing it, but you're cutting it and it's out, so
if you're just cutting it, if you're cutting it and the liquid comes out, that's fine. That's not what you're intending to do. That just depends on the juiciness. So that's the question. So the Mishnah Berurah has a leniency. Again, to take the lemon and squeeze it into the tea is a problem, because even though it's not going to exist as lemon juice itself, but it's going to be still in liquid form. So you've still extracted the liquid from the solid. So one possibility is someone just drop it inside. But for some people, that's not effective enough for enough lemon taste. So what the Mishnah Berurah suggests, it only works if you like sugar or Splenda or something like that in your tea, is if you take the spoon full of sugar or Splenda, squeeze the lemon onto that, and then it becomes absorbed into that. You can't, squeeze an entire lemon into a little bit of sugar, because then obviously you know that it's going to be overflowing. But if it's a normal amount that could be absorbed by the sugar, then you could put that into the tea and have your lemon as well. The Chaznish disagrees, but I think we can rely on somebody really needs to have their lemon in their tea, and it's not, I don't know, when I have tea with, well, I usually just throw it in anyway. I don't usually squeeze even during the week. I think the lemon, just throwing the lemon into the tea works just fine. And that, according to everybody, is fine. That's not a question at all. That's probably the simplest way to do it. But if somebody really needs the more intense lemon flavor, then they put it onto the dripping it onto the sugar and then putting the sugar into the tea would be a way around this. Okay, that's not so confusing.
No.
Straightforward. Again, what I mentioned last time is that almost everything you can that you want to do on Shabbos, you can do on Shabbos. You just need to know how to do it. You get the same result. You can still get your lemon in your tea. Okay, just a little more complicated how to get it. When you get used to it, it becomes second nature. Exactly. Okay. Now we'll try to move along to tochen. Tochen is grinding. Now, what does grinding have to do with us? They used to grind the kernels into wheat and grind the different dyes that they needed in the Mishkan into a powder in order to be able to make the dyes. But what are we grinding ever, and in particular, what are we grinding on Shabbos? So we need to define what does grinding mean. And the working definition that we're going to use for a grinding based on the poskim is breaking down of a larger item into smaller pieces. That's really what grinding is. And we think of it in its most intense form of grinding down, you know, a wheat kernel into this powder of flour. But really what the grinding does is it takes one bigger mass and divides it into much smaller pieces. And that's really the working definition of tochen. So, the Rambam says, and this is going to be the most important application for us probably, that cutting vegetables into very small pieces is tochen. You're taking the larger vegetable, you're taking your cucumber, and cutting it into tiny pieces. Says the Rambam, that's tochen min haTorah, a biblical violation of tochen.
That's the question.
Okay, so let's look a little bit more. So first, a few rules that are needed in terms of defining the malacha of tochen, and we'll try to apply it as best as we can. So tochen is prohibited whether you use a special grinding, either use your mortar and you take your mortar and your pestle out and start grinding something up, or if you use a knife. It doesn't matter. As long as you've done grinding, that's the malacha. Also important to note is that it applies both to food and to non-food items as well. The most classic application in terms of non-food items is, let's say you have mud kicked on the bottom, on the like the sides of your shoes, and you don't like how it looks there. To take the clump of mud and to, you know, rub it until it's going to be little powders of dirt, that is tochen as well. But again, Most of the applications take metal and shave it into metal shavings. You take a log and make it into sawdust. All these things, okay, hopefully they don't come up on a typical Shabbos. But, again, the vegetables is the most common case. Now, that's the question. It says you're not allowed to cut vegetables doc, very fine. But how small can the pieces be cut? So the Rishonim already are trying to debate this. The Gemara doesn't tell us how small they can be cut. So how are we supposed to figure it out? So where do you draw the line? So the Mishnah Berurah writes that it's not clear, but you should stop before you would call it small, which means you just have to be very careful. Now what exactly does that mean? So again, if you take an apple, let's take a cucumber. Everybody would agree if you cut a cucumber in half, you have big pieces, right? You cut that now into quarters, you have big pieces. I think we could probably agree that the little pieces of Israeli salad that you get when you're getting a shawarma, those are little pieces, right? We usually call those little pieces. Everything in between is the gray area. So the poskim generally say is that what you should do is you should cut it a little bigger than you would normally cut it. Because then you can still go further. Once you would still go further in terms of calling it, that you're cutting it into smaller pieces, so then it's not going to be once you could still cut it into smaller pieces, it's not going to be a problem. But there may be other ways around it still, which will be important. So, into tiny pieces, right. Well, yeah, let's... let's go through a few more of the technicalities, then we'll try and apply it and deal with questions. So first of all, tochen only applies to things that come from the ground. Even the mud is considered to be ground, so that also comes from the ground, but only applies to things that come from the ground, at least minat Torah. So that's important for things such as eggs, mm-hmm. or tuna, or meat, or chicken. Those things can be ground up. You're not allowed to grind it with a grinder, because that's considered to be just a weekday activity. It's a different prohibition. But to use to use a knife and to cut eggs very, very, very small is going to be permitted on Shabbos. It's not a token question at all, because the eggs don't grow from the ground.
So like egg salad, is it too fine, too small then?
No, because you can do it as small as you want. Egg salad is going to have about four other questions that we'll have to get to. But it doesn't grow from the ground. As long as it doesn't grow from the ground, there's no token at all. It's not even a token question. Okay, the million-dollar questions for today are going to be guacamole and egg salad that I think put together every malacha that we've talked about so far. And the ones that we'll still get to. So that our goal will be to figure out guacamole and exile, and I'll explain all the problems shortly, hopefully. One other point is that there's no tochen on something that's already been ground. So for instance, if you have a cookie, what's a cookie made out of? A cookie is made out of flour. The flour has already been ground. So to take your cookie and grind up your cookie into little pieces is fine, because it's already been ground once. Once it's already been ground once, you can grind it up again. So if you want to take matzah or something like that and grind it up, again, not with a grinder, but to break it into small pieces, that's going to be permitted, because you can't have tochein. Again, in most situations, you can't have tochein twice. One exception may be is grinding chocolate. The poskim are not sure about grinding chocolate, and the reason is because that's the case which is different, because the chocolate is ground, it comes as a bean, it's ground into a powder, and then it becomes this new bar, which is very, very different than the original creation. So again, we're still gonna have ways around these things, but chocolate is not as simple. Now what if well, once grew from the ground. I mean, that relates, there's an interesting other halakha question, which I'm not going to get into, which is the bracha on chocolate. Because the bracha on chocolate should probably really be Bori Priya Eitz. But anything which grows from a tree and can't be used in any other way, and nobody eats the cocoa bean as is, has to go through a process first, and the main way it's used is in chocolate, usually that means that it maintains its original bracha. Usually things that are ground up lose their original bracha, because because they're used in the form in which they grow, but this isn't. If someone's on the Orbach writes in a tshuva that he really thinks the bracha should be a bar peis, but the minhag ha'olam is to make a shakal, and he doesn't want to cause trouble. Okay, that's a different question, but it relates to that point that we do appreciate the fact that it did originally grow from the ground. Now the most important leniency for us is going to be the following. The same way by Borer we said last time that for immediate use it's permitted, the Rashba says, and it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch by the Ramah, that tochein for immediate use is permitted. So now we have a lot more room to. So now if you want to cut up your vegetables very small, as long as you're doing it for immediate use, then that's going to be permitted. There are those that disagree, but the Ramah says it, and one I think has the right to rely on this Ramah. Certainly, if one couldn't have done it, if you could do it before Shabbos, or if you could do it in a way that avoids tochein, so it's even better. But if not, one has the right to rely on this Ramah. But says the Mishnah Brura, if we're going to learn out from Borer that it has to be done, that it's allowed to be done immediately, then we need to take another restriction that we have from Borer, which is that you're not allowed to use a special utensil that's designed for that purpose. So for instance, to take, I've seen this thing, there's this chopper thing where you can sort of stick the vegetables inside and push down, No, it like makes it even into little squares.
Yeah, it gets,
like a Vidalia chopper or something like that. I've seen this box lying around. So that would be a problem even for immediate use. To cut it by hand, so that would be the Rashba saying, even though it's tochen, even though I'm chopping it into tiny pieces for my salad, and that's considered to be grinding, it's for immediate use. So as long as it's for immediate use, then that's going to be permitted. But to use this utensil, which makes it much easier, and is a special utensil designed for this purpose of cutting vegetables very, very small, that would not be allowed. That would not be allowed on Shabbos. But again, it's important to keep in mind what I mentioned last time, that immediate use means immediate use. So that it means in terms of the time for the preparation for that meal. So to cut up the an Israeli salad for Shabbos lunch in the morning so that you have time to go to shul is not immediate use. You'd have to do it after you get home from shul, because there's that break in between of non-meal preparations, or non-meal anything, of going to shul again, which is certainly important and fine. You just make the salad afterwards. It has to be done immediately. And similarly, you wouldn't be able to, after Shabbos lunch, to immediately do it for Shalosh Shudas if you wanted to have the chopped up Israeli salad for Shalosh Shudas. You'd have to do it, again, whenever you would normally start the preparations beforehand in order to be done in time for the meal.
But only with a knife, not with a...
Only with a knife, right? Now with a special, rice. The garlic press would be a problem, but if you want to cut the garlic very small, that you could do for immediate use, right?
You know, there's
right.
A potato masher.
Right.
So
that would probably be considered to be a special utensil for grinding. That's what it's used for.
That's my original question. I'll change the word tuna fish to Israeli salad.
Okay.
I make it. And I want to have it for lunch.
Right.
Now I have leftovers. You see, I learned...
Leftovers is fine.
But I learned you could take like a little bit in your mouth and then use the rest. Well, that's what I learned in my life.
That's like... Dan, if you heard that from somebody... I'm not going to say that on my own. If you heard that from somebody then who's reliable, you know, continue doing it. You could certainly make enough for the meal and to make sure you have enough that it's in abundance. You don't have to worry. Again, you know, sometimes people who are hosting get very nervous they're going to run out of something. So they automatically, the normal preparation is to make more for that meal and to assume if there's leftovers, I'll serve it by Shalosh Shudas, I'll serve it on Sunday and the like. But to just, so that's perfectly fine. To make more so that you can ensure that you have enough and that you'll deal with the leftovers, that's certainly fine. But to chop it in the morning and then take a spoonful to say that it's for now and do it later, I'm not going to say that.
Is this a problem with the potato masher that's usually slotted? And according to last week, that would be separated.
Well, it depends if you're separating anything. If you're just trying to mash the potato, but you're not looking to separate it, you're just trying to mash it, that's not a separating issue. If you somehow were trying to use that for separating, not sure exactly what you would do with it, then that would be if you could use it in such a way, then it would be a separate. Just because the potato comes on top, you don't want it to be separate, you want it to be mashed. You're going to take the potato that comes on top and mix it back in with the potato on the bottom afterwards.
You're not like intentionally.
You said no slotted anything on top.
I was talking about for trying to remove liquid. That was why I said no slot anything. So you have coleslaw, and you want to use a slotted spoon so that the liquid falls out, or the chullent, the slotted spoon. So that's the clue for separating. That's the problem. That's the utensil for separating. But here you're not trying to separate. You could technically use your slotted spoon for your potato kugel when it's not going to separate, unless it's one of these really oily, gross things. But if it's not one of those, it's a normal kugel, then that would be fine.
That's not like a wireless.
That might be a question. That might be a lush question of the next. I don't think it's a token. You're not grinding anything. It's a mixing question. So we'll try to talk about mixing shortly, hopefully. One other thing which is important is that token is also permitted. Usually when you have a malacha and you do it in an odd fashion, so that knocks it down a level from, let's say, if it's forbidden min HaTorah, and now it's only forbidden min Rabbanan. Tochein is an exception that if you do it in a funny fashion, that makes the malacha permitted. So that if you can use, so like the hand, you know, if you have, somehow you can use the handle of your knife or your spoon in order to dice your cucumbers, I don't know how you do that, but if you could do that, then you could even do it not for immediate use. Meaning it's a separate category of things that would be permitted. If somehow you could use, again, it has to be in a weird way, so if you could take the back of the knife and somehow with the back of the knife cut your cucumber, then that would be okay. There is a case where that's important. So it's not... Okay, we'll get to it now. The question which the poskim discusses was about mashing something. So on the one hand, mashing is you've taken the original thing and you've smushed it into a mush. So do we say that you've broken down the original big thing into so many little pieces that it's mushed together? Or do we say, no, it was in one shape of solid before, and now it's in another shape of solid, just a little bit mushier afterwards. So this is a machlokas between Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish. So most poskim are machmir and assume that it is a problem. So mashing a banana, they say it's basically you've pulverized the banana. It's totally different than it was before. So even though it's the liquid or whatever it is inside the banana holds it together as one mass, it's still a totally different form than the original form, and that would be a problem of tochein on Shabbos. The same thing would be true with an avocado. If you take the avocado and you mash the avocado, so it takes on a slightly different form, it's still very, stuck together, but that would still be a problem of tochein. So based on what we've said so far, there are two ways that you can potentially get around it, right? You can mash something if it's going to be for immediate use, or you can do it with a shino. You can do it differently. And here the post can recommend doing it with a shino, because that would be good according to everybody. The immediately we said is an opinion that we try to avoid relying on if we don't need to. If we need to, we can. So the best thing is if you can definitely mash a banana with the back of a spoon. I've done it. It's not that hard. You can, the back of a fork or something. Again, all you need to do is be applying pressure evenly, and it's going to mash. And an avocado is soft enough, you're going to be able to do that as well. So there, if one needs or wants to mash a banana or a avocado, it's best to do it with a shino, with some sort of change from the way that it would normally be done.
And then you don't have to do it immediately? Before?
And then you don't have to do it immediately. You could maybe feel better to do it immediately, but you don't have to do it immediately. One other important leniency that exists is vegetables that are very, very soft and basically don't require much pressure in order to mush them into smaller pieces are considered, while they're in the solid state, to already be ground up, because it really requires so little effort to do it, and therefore pushing with a fork or something, getting the cooked vegetables like from a chicken soup or something like that, where they've really been cooked very thoroughly into smaller pieces, would not be a tochein problem at all. Okay? So far so good? Okay, so that's tochein. Now we'll try to get the third malacha of the day and then try to put some of the things together. The third malacha I wanted to talk about is lush. Lush is kneading. Again, kneading, who's doing any kneading on Shabbos? So we'll find out. So what is the definition of, what's the definition of kneading? Again, kneading in the classical sense of taking water and flour and making a dough out of it, so we're not doing that, that doesn't really come up on Shabbos. But again, we try to figure out what's happening in kneading. Basically, what's happening is that you have one substance, let's say, such as the flour, and you mix the water in, and by mixing these two things together, you create one new item, right? You take your separate flour, your separate water, you mix them together, and now you have a new solid item that which totally, each individual part has lost its identity, doesn't look like flour anymore, doesn't look like water. Now you have a new solid mass that we call dough. That's what's happening when you knead. The machlokas in the Gemara is the point where kneading happens. Because again, there are two steps that are required, at least two steps, maybe there are more, I don't know so much about kneading, but there are at least two steps involved in kneading. When you first take your flour, we have the flour in a bowl, and you pour the water in, so immediately some of the flour already begins to clump up because it mixes naturally with the water. So is that already considered to be kneading? Or no, only once you get in and actually do the kneading with your hands or with a utensil or something else, that's when the kneading takes place. So we're machmer, and we assume that kneading could take place at either of those two steps. The first one called nesinas hamayim, the putting in of the water, and the other one is referred to as gibul. Gibul meaning the actual mixing, where you take the two substances and you mix them together. So that's the first point that's important to note. That's basically the definition of kneading, and those are the two important stages. The next point that's very important is that we have different types of mixtures that we can create. We have what's called a blila ava, a thick mixture, which is a dough, something where you put the flour and the water together, or you put the two substances together, and you have something which isn't pourable. It becomes really like a solid mass. But we also have what's referred to as a blila raka, which is a thin dough, which I guess is probably better referred to as a batter. Right? A batter is basically a dough that pours. It's a very thin dough. So if you're making, pancakes or, not cookies, cakes I think are usually a batter. Right? Something which you can pour, that is going to be a thinner type of mixture. The truth is you have a third type of mixture also, which is where you take a powder and you mix it in with water and it remains as a liquid, such as you have, let's say, with cocoa, chocolate milk powder. So you have the powder or iced tea, any of these things. So you have the same ingredients, right? You have a solid or a powdery mixture. You have water, and you put them together. But the nature of it is such that you put in so much water that it remains a drink, and that it's supposed to be a drink, and all of the powdery stuff is supposed to get mixed in to the water. So these three different mixtures are on three different levels. The first mixture of making a real solid dough, that's prohibited in HaTorah. It's a biblical prohibition. Creating a batter, a pourable dough, that's forbidden midrabbanan, that's a rabbinic prohibition. And then the third level of the water mixing in such a way that it overpowers the powder totally, that is permitted. One's allowed to do that on Shabbos.
Coffee,
right. Different types.
We're talking about sugar before the same thing. Sugar is the same.
Right, exactly.
That's involved.
Correct.
Does it matter if you put the liquid on the batter or the powder on the liquid?
In the third case or in the other cases? In the third case, it doesn't matter. The third case is just permitted. For other Hilchos Shabbos questions, you might, in terms of it's hot, you may have bishul questions, depending on the order that you do it. In terms of coloring, you may have those types of questions. But just in terms of lush, it's totally permitted. So basically, now that we have our blila ava and our blila raka, we have our dough and we have our batter, so creating a thick dough on Shabbos is always going to be prohibited. So if you're going to, it doesn't come up. So the times that it would come up is if you're making, again, not getting involved in the other potential must involved, bishul, things like that. If let's say you're making some sort of instant oatmeal and you like it very thick. Some people like it thin, some people like it thick. We have this machlokas in my house all the time. But if I make it wrong for the wrong person, then it's a catastrophe. But some people like it that it's really thick. Or another case where I think it's supposed to be thick is something like instant potatoes. So I don't know if people actually make those things, but they exist. And the goal there is that you mix in the water and it becomes a solid mass of mashed potatoes. So there, you've really created what we would call a blila ava. It's not something which can pour anymore. So that is going to be forbidden to do on Shabbos. The cases that do come up more commonly are the blila raka cases, are the cases where it's a thinner batter. The most common case is baby cereal, that flaky oatmeal stuff that you put the milk in and you mix it together. And usually for the baby, you don't want it to be as thick as the blila ava. You want it to be thin enough that it's somewhat pourable. So that's the case where it comes up most frequently. We'll talk about other cases shortly, but that's the case where it's most frequently comes up. So in that case, when again we're dealing with the derabanan, because it's still a mixture which pours, it's not an actual batter. So Chazal said, if you do a shinoi, if you do a change, then it is permitted. But, as we mentioned before, there are two stages that are critical in terms of the malacha of lush. One stage is the initial putting in of the water, and the other stage is the actual mixing it together. And since we're machmer for both, therefore two shinuyim have to be done. You need to make a change both in terms of putting in the water and the change in how you're going to mix it. So what's the change in terms of putting in the water? So normally, when you have one of these powder things and you're going to add the liquid, you first put the powder in the bowl and then you put in the liquid, because you have better control in terms of adjusting it if you put in the liquid second. So if you need to do a change, you have to do the opposite. So if you wanted to make this baby cereal on Shabbos, you would first put the milk inside the bowl and then add to that the oatmeal flaky things. And by doing that, you have a change in the order, which allows you to do it. The second change, which is even more important, is a change in the way you mix it. So normally you would take your spoon and just mix it. So you need to do a change. So the poskim speak of 2 to 3 different types of change. One possible change is to use your finger instead of using, or use your hand instead of using a utensil. Most people wouldn't mix the, it's not like kneading a dough. When you're dealing with a batter, most people wouldn't mix it with their hands. So that's one possibility. The other one that they talk about is what's called shesi v'arev, which means a crisscross. Normally when you mix something, you just kind of stir it in circles. So instead, the poskim say that if you go like this, it just makes X's. It takes a little bit longer to do it. But if you do that, then you've made a change in the way that you are combining it. And I think Rav Moshe says that you could even just use the back of the spoon instead of the front of the spoon. You could do that. So some prefer that you do both of the changes, do the crisscross with the back of the spoon. But you can rely on Rav Moshe as well.
What is it about the shinui that makes it permissible?
So again, usually the way it works is that a shinui drops it down a level. So that's the simplest way of explaining it here. So since we're dealing with the derabanan, right, because it's only a batter, it's not talking about an actual dough, so doing it in a strange way knocks it down. The only reason that we need two is because of this lack of clarity as to which moment is what defines the malacha. Is the main focus of the malacha the initial mixture of putting the water in even before you've actually gotten into the kneading it? Or no, it's the second part when you're actually heavily involved in kneading it. So I think the most common cases which come up, which I think brings everything that we've talked about together, is egg salad and tuna salad and guacamole. And I think that these questions, at least the egg salad and the guacamole, I think bring together every single malacha potentially that we've spoken about over the last 2 weeks. Again, first of all, with the egg salad, you have to keep in mind the borer question. Right? Peeling an egg is a borer. Is borer. You're allowed to do it, but it has to be done for immediate use. So already immediately you have to keep in mind when you're going to, if you want to be making egg salad, either the eggs have to be peeled beforehand, or you need to peel it for immediate use. You can't just peel it in the right after the Shabbos afternoon meal because you want it for Shalosh Shudas. So that's one malacha that's involved. And the truth is the same thing is true with the avocado, because there's a borer question in terms of getting out the pit, in terms of removing the skin. So again, you're allowed to do it, but it needs to be done for immediate use. So that's malacha number one. The second malacha that we need to address is tochein. So when it comes to egg salad, so we said tochein is not a problem because it doesn't grow from the ground. Right, so the eggs you can cut however you want to do it, again without using a special smashing implement, but you can certainly cut up with the fork, whatever it is, however you would mash up the egg salad, you can certainly do that. The guacamole, on the other hand, has the tochein issue, but again, if you're going to be doing it for immediate use in terms of peeling it, and because guacamole usually turns nasty brown if you do it too far in advance anyway, so it doesn't pose such a problem. So that tochein also has to be done immediately, and as we said, it should be done with a shinui. It should be done with a change, so you can mash it with the back of the spoon. What other malachos do we have? Tochein the dash. Oh, so dash is only dash is more for fun to say that it's related. It's not really so related. The dash would be related if you, because sometimes people like to put lemon juice into either the egg salad, but more frequently, I think, into the guacamole. Mm-hmm. So there, you have a dash issue in terms of squeezing it. But in terms of the guacamole, you're probably okay because it's basically a salad. So to squeeze it directly into the avocado mush would be okay in terms of dash. Now the question becomes, what about lush? What about kneading it together? So let's deal with egg salad and tuna salad first, right? Normally people will take mayonnaise and they're going to mix the mayonnaise together with the chopped up eggs or the chopped up tuna in order to make it into one. So here the poskim differentiate. If you have very big pieces of tuna or very big pieces of egg salad, so even when you mix the mayonnaise into it, it doesn't become one thing. It just happens to be that the mayonnaise is a sticky consistency, so it holds the pieces together. But you don't look at it as, you know, one solid mass of egg salad. It's being bound together by this by the mayonnaise, and that wouldn't be a lush problem at all because, again, it doesn't become one unit. If you chop it into very fine pieces, which is allowed because there's no tochein, there's no grinding problem when it comes to eggs because they didn't grow from the ground, and then you're mixing the mayonnaise, so then really it becomes like a totally like a new thing. So in order to be able to do that, so first you have to figure out, is it maybe it's even a blila ava? Is it more like a dough? Is it more like a batter? It becomes so solid in a certain sense, it's like a dough. If it's really like a dough, so then that makes us very nervous because we usually don't allow a dough to be done at all. The poskim that are makel assume that throughout the generations, Jews have always eaten eggs and onions and mixed together somehow in Shabbos, and it can't be that everybody was doing it improperly. So then they assume they should just make sure to do the shinui. You should make sure to do at least the lush changes, which would mean, here, I don't think you need to assume in terms of the order of putting it in, because nothing happens when you squeeze or take the spoon and put the mayonnaise on top. It doesn't mix together at all until you actually knead it. It's not like water, which just immediately mixes in right away. So here, you would just have to do the change in terms of using the back of the spoon to mix it. You can do it with your hands if you so desire. Wearing gloves, you can wear gloves. Okay, don't do it with your hands. Whatever tickles your fancy. But again, doing some of the shinuyim in order to do it. And the same thing is true with the tuna. That the tuna also does not have a problem in terms of tochein because it doesn't grow from the ground. It's fish. And there also, if you want to mix it together, the main concern is to do it with some sort of shinui. When it comes to the guacamole, so there, it really depends what you're mixing in. If what you're mixing in really is spices, it's hard to say if there's even lush taking place. I don't know exactly what people put in guacamole, but if all you're putting in is some lemon juice and, I don't know, some... what do you put in spices? And spices, there's no lush taking place. You're not creating anything new. If you're going to mix it in with mayonnaise, I don't know if people do that.
Yeah, they do.
You do? Okay. If you're going to mix it in with mayonnaise, which sort of was going to even change the consistency, so then you have a more serious question. There you would have to make sure to do it with the shinoi. I think if you're doing it, they're making the guacamole, just mashing the avocado and putting in some spices there, I don't think you need to have the shinoi. You just need to do it for immediate use. And maybe use the shinoi in terms of mashing the avocado. But in terms of just putting the avocado with spices, I don't think that would be a problem.
So let's see a question about
sure.
The kneading, the actual act of kneading.
Yeah.
Is taking a
hand. Well, taking your hands, I mean, we usually don't do it with our hands. We probably usually do it with a mixer more. You know, your KitchenAid probably does most of your kneading for you. Mm-hmm. No?
Not all.
Okay.
I mean, I think about clay when I need clay or any substances that physical work of pushing.
Right, so I think that's true. Just I don't think it's necessarily defined by hands. The post-communism is not defined by hands. I think it's defined by, you know, engaging the mixture in a way that's going to mix it together. You know, there are certain things that you might want to mix together with a spoon. If you have a very thick batter, you can't mix with a spoon. The spoon's going to either break or bend or not gonna work. But you could certainly use your KitchenAid to do it, and that doesn't... That's not the same motion as your hands. It just it's just stronger. Right, it would still be considered to be kneading. One of the cases, like, let's say potato salad. If you cut potato salad and you're mixing with mayonnaise, usually the pieces of potato are fairly big. That's not it doesn't become one mixture. That's not going to be a lush problem.
It's not just water, if anything.
Yeah. And so the truth is that mayonnaise may be even a little better. If you're actually using oil might be even worse than like you're gonna make your egg salad with oil. So it's probably not so healthy, but not that mayonnaise is so healthy, but I think mayonnaise is probably still better than oil. But that's not my department. But it's a little bit, there might be a little bit more chamor, because oil is more similar to water even than the mayonnaise is.
Right.
Correct. Mixing liquids is not going to be a problem. Okay. I think that covers most of what I wanted to cover.
What about like in a guacamole if you cut little pieces of tomato and put it in?
Tomato? So what happens to tomato? They don't mix it. They still look like tomato afterwards. It becomes like what?
If you cut the tomato right.
Very small right beforehand. Mix it in.
Or you have it cut before. Shabbos.
Right. Doesn't sound like a lush problem. Certainly if you do it with the back of the spoon and mix it in, that's certainly going to be okay. It doesn't even sound like such a lush problem necessarily.
What's on your schedule?
Okay.